This week's parasha we read was Parashas Kisavai. Parashas Kisavai, I believe, has quite a few essential messages for specifically this time of the year as we wind down the year, as Tav Shin Pei comes to a close, and we reflect not only on the upcoming year, but I think we reflect heavily on the past year. And I think the Torah is teaching us in Parashas Kisavai throughout the parasha, and I'll point out where I think it's extremely clear. The Torah is giving us a message for life about how we should perceive things. That perceptions matter. How do we look at something can define the situation. For example, Rav Moshe Feinstein points out in his Sefer that the Torah tells us that there are these brachas and klolos that are going to take place on two mountains. One mountain is Har Evel, one mountain is called Har Gerizim. Har Gerizim is the mountain for the blessings, and Har Evel is the mountain for the cursings. Yet, when you look in the Torah writes that where should you bring the Mizbeach? Build the Mizbeach and offer karbonos on Har Evel, on the mountain to which all the klolos were given. So asks Rav Moshe Feinstein, why would that be the mountain chosen to express a carbon? We would have thought if you had to pick which mountain you should bring the carbon, you should bring the carbon on Har Gerizim, the mountain that's full of blessing, positive, good. Why would you bring it on Har Evel? So Rav Moshe Feinstein explains, because the Torah is teaching us that we as Jews believe that nothing is intrinsically bad. All that Hashem does is for our good. Even punishments, even klolos, even curses, even negative, even bad things are deep down good. They're a kapara, they're in place of other things, whatever should have happened. But says Rav Moshe, the Torah is reminding us nothing is intrinsically bad. Har Evel is not bad. It's not the bad mountain versus the good mountain. It's the mountain that happens to give off klolos, which normally are not good, but we deep down believe that when we see, we experience pain and suffering and curses, we realize that this is ultimately for our benefit. I think it's very apropos as we look back over the last year, when we look back from a year ago, Tav Shin Pei, it's very hard to look at the year in passing without getting a very bleak and negative outlook. You know, there was like 2 years last year. It was the year before March and the year after March. Before March, life was pretty good. The economy was doing great. Everyone was happy. Then Corona came and we're like in a different world. Like the March till now was like a different world. But I think the Torah is reminding us that there was nothing really... Well, I wouldn't look back and say it was a bad year. Yes, bad things happened. Many people lost their lives. Many people got sick. Many people lost their parnasa. The yeshivas were closed. The shuls were closed. The simchas were closed. No doubting that. We all lived through it. But it's a question of how we're going to perceive it. Are we going to perceive it as bad, negative, terrible? Or are we going to perceive that this is what Hashem sent us for whatever reason, and this was ultimately the best thing that we needed in our lives? They say over a famous story, I don't know if anyone listened to Reb Hesh Weinrib on Tisha B'Av. Hesh Weinrib is my father-in-law's first cousin, so I try to listen to him because we're family, but also because he's quite a very talented historian, Rav, speaker, therapist, v'chulu. So if you listen to him on this year on Tisha B'Av, he was in the afternoon slot. Everything was pre-recorded. He was in the afternoon slot. About why I was in the morning slot, which that worked out better for me because I was in my shul in the morning. So the afternoon I had more time to listen to Rabbi Hesh Weinrib. So he spoke about a fellow named Rav God Eisner. Rav God Eisner was a Ger Chassid who went through the Holocaust. And he was a Mashkiach in the Ger Beis Medrash. And this story I heard from him, but I saw it in print myself also. That this fellow, Rav God Eisner, once met another Yid that he remembered from the Alter Heim, a Jew that he remembered from the pre-Holocaust days, who at this point was no longer religious. And Rav God said to him, what's going on? What happened? So he said, what do you want from me? I lost my father, I lost my mother, I lost my brother, I lost my sister, I lost my whole family in the Holocaust. Do you expect me to want to continue in the ways of HaKadosh Baruch Hu? So Rav God Eisner said to him, he said, I have a question for you. He said, do you understand how the radio works? You understand how it's possible that if I talk in one city, someone can hear me in another city? Again, in those early years, the radio was life. Everyone gathered around the radio. Everyone lived from the radio. It was the excitement. It was the mode of information. It was the radio. Right? So he said, do you understand how the radio works? So he said, no. He said, yet you still use it, right? You still turn it on. You still get benefit out of it. So I've got Eisner told him, he said, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the same way. We don't understand the way it works. But just because we don't understand the way it works doesn't mean we turn it off. Doesn't mean we're no longer part of it. We go along with it. We don't understand how it works, but this is how it works. This is the process. You do X, Y, and Z, and we don't understand all the Reisha Prakim. The follow-up of that story is many years later, if God Eisner was walking down the street in Eretz Yisrael, and all of a sudden a motorcycle stops. And a fellow says, come, you want to ride? Come jump on my motorcycle. And if God Eisner says to him, I don't understand how a motorcycle works. There's not enough room for two people. There's not really four wheels. How does this work? So the fellow said to him, and the radio, you do understand? This was the fellow that many years ago he met, who recently had become from from Rav Gad Eisner's line about, do you understand how the radio works? And he kind of threw it back in his face. But the case, I think, is still very true. We do not understand the ways of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, nor do we claim to understand the ways of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but that's okay. Even if we don't understand the ways of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we still follow his ways, we will still lead the life that represents a Torah life. But I think we find this message in other places in the parasha as well. We find that the Torah is giving us an outlook for life. The Torah is telling us, how should we view life? You know, we're coming to Rosh Hashanah. Rosh Hashanah is one of the most important days of the year. It's a day of tefillah. And the question is, what should we be davening for? What really matters in life? What's really important? So it's interesting, when you come to the parasha of Bikurim, and really other places in parasha of Kisava, you'll find that the Torah gives you a very clear description of what's important in life. When the Torah gives the brachas in the beginning of the parasha, the Torah says, and if you listen to Hashem, all the good that will befall you. If you look at the psukim, it's very interesting. It says, parach pri bitnecha, ufri ad masacha, ufri bemtecha. What will be the blessings? First, your children. The pri bitnecha is the fruit of your stomach, your children. And then afterwards, you'll have the blessing of the other things. And the Mefarshim point out, the Torah is reminding us, what is really important in life? What are we davening for? What do we really want? Do we want to have millions and millions of dollars? Or do we want to raise wonderful Jewish children? What's really a blessing in life? Is a blessing in life to be very wealthy, but to have no nachas from children and grandchildren? To see them not following the way that we want of them or that we're proud of? But I have a lot of money. It's okay. I have a lot of money in the bank. Or really what's important to us is to be able to have a family that we can be proud of, and we can know that our grandparents and our parents are proud of what we produced. And more importantly, we know Hashem is proud of what we produce. And that's what the Torah first writes. Parach pri bitnecha. The first blessing is you should have children. You should have good children, healthy children. Yerushimayim children, Torah-dikah children, that's real nachas. You know, as much as we love all our children to be doctors and lawyers, and hopefully they should, but the real nachas is going to come when they're following the ways of HaKadosh Baruch, when they're living a Torah life. That's going to be the greatest reward that we can have. And the Mishnah tells us that when the farmers used to come to bring their bikurim, they used to daven. You know what they were davening for? They didn't daven that the fruit should be good for the next year. They didn't daven they should have another economical, productive year. They daven that they should have productive, good children, Yerei Shemayim, following the ways of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I think as we come to Rosh Hashanah, again, it's a very mixed time. We're davening for a lot of things, and of course we need parnasa. You can't raise frum kids in America or in Eretz Yisrael or anywhere in the world without money. Tuition is very expensive. Kosher food is very expensive. Summer camp is very expensive. Everything's expensive. I understand. But the question is, what's our main focus? Is our main focus, I want money, 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 or my main focus is I want to have good children? I want to have wonderful children, grandchildren that I can be proud of. That Hashem can be proud of. That's my first. My second is, of course, I need the money to be able to support them, to be able to find ways to care for them. But I think as we come to the Rosh Hashanah, we come to the Yom HaDin, and we're going to pour out our hearts in tefillah, I think it's important to prioritize what's really important. Well, you know, money comes and goes. Children don't come and go, or they definitely shouldn't. You know, this is what's really important, to produce generations that HaKadosh Baruch Hu will be proud of, that we will be proud of, that our parents and grandparents will be proud of us, that we're continuing the Shalshalas HaTorah, that we're continuing the beautiful continuation of Torah. It's not a small thing. It's not an easy thing. Raising children in 2020 is probably the hardest thing in the world, to raise children. I was talking once to Pinchas Scheinberg's daughter. Pinchas Scheinberg's daughter lives here in Queens. Her daughter was runs a gan where my kids go. All my kids have gone to her. Most of my kids have gone to her. So when I had my last son, so she told me that her father used to tell everyone when they had a baby that they should grow up to be an erlicha child, or a good baby, a good kid. So she said that her father used to say that that's not a small thing to ask these days, to raise good kids. And I told her, I said, Kol Shekain in our generation. Rabbi Pinchas Scheinberg, you know, lived a very long time, but again, he was still from the previous generation. Today, to raise erlicha children, good children, that are following the ways of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, is not a small task. It is not a small thing. It is not easy. There are so many things pulling kids away today that doesn't make them want to learn Torah or follow the way of Torah. It is something that is very, very hard. So I think as we prioritize, as we come to the Yom HaDin, we ask ourselves, what do I really want from the upcoming year? What do I really want for Tav Shin Pei Alpha? I want to have nachas. I want to have Yiddish and nachas. My children, my grandchildren, future generations should all be good from healthy Jews. That's it. That's what's the most important. Yeah, of course, I should have money to be able to pay for their tuitions. Avada, you need to have money to pay for their tuitions. I should be able to pay, for whatever else you need. But ultimately, the main priority should be deep down this idea of we want to have our priorities straight. It's interesting, the Chassam Sofer has a different spin on that pasuk, which I think is interesting. The Chassam Sofer says,
I usually don't like to interject on the parcha part, but I got to tell you, Rav Rabbi Herzberg Zatzal from Scheinberg, but he used to speak it almost, and he used to always make it his business to go to, that's the most important thing, to be Erlich Yidden. Yep. And that's what our main focus should be. I mean, you know, he said all the other things, yeah, being a London, being a Tom, Chacham, all that. But to be Erlich Yidden is not a simple thing.
100%. I think so. I think it's very hard today. It's very easy today to do things that are questionable and even justify it, as we've spoken in the past about. But the Chassam Sofer learns that the bracha is that a person should first raise his children, and then he should make the big bucks. The Chassam Sofer says it's very hard to raise children when you're very wealthy. So first raise your children, then you can make the millions. They're already grown up, they're already older, they were already raised on the old system, and on the way things used to be. It's an interesting ideology from the Chassam Sofer. He suggests that a person should, even though again most of us would rather have the money when we're raising the kids, not when they're already older, but he suggests let first have the kids, and then after the kids see what it means to live a simple life, see what it means to live a simple life without all the fancy gashmis, then you can make the money and then you could be successful. But I just want to conclude with the Ramban that we've spoken about in the past, a very powerful Ramban at the end of this week's parasha. Oror isha shalo yokim es divrei ha-Torah azois. The Ramban has many different pshatim and how to understand that pasuk of cursed is the man who does not stand up the Torah. The Hafalah has a pshat, which I think is worth mentioning this time of the year as we go back to school for many children. The Hafalah learns it's a tain on the Rabbeim. He says many Rabbeim teach kids wrong information. They just teach them the wrong things. Not because Rabbeim or Moras are bad, but because they're often misinformed, or they're not educated. So he writes, Oror isha shelo yokim es divrei ha-Torah, going back on all those teachers, all those malamdim, who teach the children the wrong this, the wrong that, the wrong halacha, the wrong hashkafa. And the truth is, it's a very big achrayis to be an elementary school rebbe. Because what you remember, what you do in elementary school sticks with you for the rest of your life. How many people still take three steps back and forward from the way they remember back in second grade? And if the Rebbe didn't teach it right, then it's not going to be right until you learn it otherwise. So I always find that it's a huge achrayis to teach the younger grades, because that's what sticks with them. Girsa d'yankasa, you tell a kid something when he's 8, 9 years old, forget it. That's halacha moshe mesinai. So if you as the teacher, you as a mora, and I'd add, you as a parent or a grandparent, it's also a big achrayis. Now, those of us that are zeichet to spend time with our grandchildren, they live in the neighborhood, or they come around to visit, you're a massive influence on their life. They're watching you. And if you're going to be feeding them information which is not 100% accurate, they're going to go around saying, oh, my grandfather told me that this is mutter and that's mutter, and it's a big achrayis. I think it's an achrayis for all rabbeim and rabbanim and everyone, educators. It's a big achrayis to make sure we're giving over the right information, because we don't want to produce a generation of amaratzis and say, oh, my rebbe told me this, my rebbe told me that. I'm not talking about the kids that make it up. Oh, my Rebbe really said that. No, I'm talking about Rebbeim who really say things. But not because Rebbeim are bad people. They're not always necessarily 100% accurate. But the Ramban has a different pshat. The Ramban says it's referring to those people that did not feel the urge to spread Torah and to raise the banner of Torah. The Ramban writes, there are many people who are very, very happy with their own life. They're sitting and they're learning and they're davening. But they didn't do anything to raise the level of learning that could be done. They never pushed to have more shurim, higher level shurim, more learning, more about this Torah. They just were very happy with Shalom Alei Nafshi. I'm happy with my life. I have my chavrusa, I have my daf yomi, I have my shir, and the rest of the world can, you know, figure it out on their own. The Ramban writes, no, aror or ish, it's a curse that you have the ability, if you have the ability to raise the level of learning, whether it be yourself, your family, your community, your shul, you can raise it up and you don't. It's a taina. We all have to ask ourselves, how can we perhaps raise the level? Can we make it more shurim? Can we have deeper level shurim? You know, can we spread Torah in another way that hasn't yet been discussed, hasn't yet been on the table? Says the Ramban, all of those would fall under the banner of Aror Ish, Asher Layakim Es Divrei HaTorah Hazeh. Okay, just a quick going forward, Rabbi Say, this will be the last year till after Sukkot on Rabbi Elazar the Mila. This will be our 81st cheer on Rebbe Elazar the Mila. I don't know if it will be our last cheer on Rebbe Elazar the Mila, because I don't know what we're doing after Sukkot yet. But this will be our last cheer till after Sukkot, because next Sunday, in Mirz Hashem, we'll be discussing Rosh Hashanah topics. The following Sunday is Rosh Hashanah. And if I'm not mistaken, the following Sunday is Erev Yom Kippur. So, I don't know when we're going to find time to discuss something Lomdish on Yom Kippur. Maybe we'll have to steal some time during the week. And then over Sukkot, maybe we'll have some Sukkot Shurim, but I don't see any more Rebbe Elazar the Mila until after we finish with Sukkot. And I don't know, I haven't decided yet, will we be switching Limudim after Sukkot, or will we be staying with this Limud? So stay tuned to all of that information. But nonetheless, next Sunday, Mirz Hashem, we will have a Shir. We will be on Inyanei Rosh Hashanah. So let's just wrap up. Today's Shir is really a shtickle wrap-up of the sugya of Mesa Ochiv Machmas Mila. We've been speaking a lot about the topic of Mesa Ochiv Machmas Mila. Maybe we've been speaking too much about it. Maybe we should have went weiter. I don't know. It's another thing I can clap a chait for this Yom Kippur. But in any case, as we wrap up the sugya, I just want to talk about an issue which we really haven't touched upon, which is a very yisoidistik and machloikish rishonim, and as we'll see, it's negated to many other things. The question is, you have a case of Mesa Ochiv Machmas Mila. So we had a machloikis Tanoim, Rebbe, the Rabbonon, Rebbe and Abshim Gamliel. How many times does it take to make a Mesa Ochiv Machmas Mila? Does it take two brothers to die? Does it take three brothers to die? And the Gemara seems to have paskin, and that's where Moshe assumed in the Tshuva, that the Gemara took a stand. The Gemara paskin halach l'maisa, that after two times, it's already considered a Mesa Ochiv Machmas Mila. That's the way we saw it in Shulchan Aruch. Now the question is we've spoken in the past that if you have a Mesa Ochiv Machmas Mila, it does not mean he never gets a bris. It just means he doesn't get a bris yet. We wait until, the way the Rambam says it, until he gets better. We even saw an opinion from the Achronim, we wait till he's 13. But by and large, the assumption is at some point, we will revisit his medical situation, and we will see if he's up to getting the bris. If he's up to getting the bris, we'll give it to him. If he's not, he won't. So the question that we need to discuss is what's his status until he gets his bris milah? Would this third brother be able to eat truma? We know an oral is not allowed to eat truma. Is this baby considered an oral? Because lamaisa, he has no bris. He has no bris. It's mitzias. Or maybe he's exempt from bris. Because he's considered a mesa ochiv machmas mila, he has a ptur. And because he has a ptur, that ptur will exempt him from being considered a oral. So l'chayre it's a machloikis v'shein. Why? Let's look at number one. Number one is the Mishnah, opening Mishnah in the seventh perek of Yevamah's perek Ha'aral. The Mishnah opens up Ha'aral v'chalat meim and Aral and all those people that are tamei lo yoichlu b'truma. They are not allowed to eat truma. Okay, zozok the Mishnah. The Mishnah says an Aral is not allowed to eat truma. What's an Aral? How does one define an Aral? So Rashi says on the page, look Rashi, what's an Aral number two? Kayin shemesi achiv machmas mila. Says Rashi, you know who's an Aral who's not allowed to eat truma? If you have a guy who had two older brothers, he's a Kayin. Because only a Kayin's allowed to eat truma. He's a Kayin who had two older brothers who both died from bris mila. Says Dr. Rashi, that third baby, he's considered an Aral. And he's an Aral, he's not allowed to eat truma. So according to Rashi, in the case of Mesa Ochiv Machmas Mila, even though he's an Oinus, even though he's a Ptor, even though he's not even allowed to have a bris mila, but as we'd say, tough luck. But Mesa, you don't have a bris. If you don't have a bris, you can't eat truma. So Rashi learns he's not allowed to eat truma. However, Rabbeinu Tam, in quite a few places in Shas, disagrees with Rashi. Rabbeinu Tam is quoted in Tosfos and Chagiga, Tosfos and Zvachim. We'll see those two places, Tosfos and Chagiga and Tosfos and Zvachim. Number 3 says, I'm sorry, 2b. So if you look in 2b first, Tosfos and Zvachim says, nope, that's not pshat. He writes over here, Oral, Befarish, Mesach, Machas, Milva, Rabbeinu Tam, Befarish, the Mummer, La'arolo. He says, Rabbeinu Tam, that's not the pshat. We're not talking about a guy who's Mesa Ochiv Machmas Mila, but rather we're talking about a guy who doesn't want to get a bris. He's not interested. He is anti-bris mila. He's an extreme liberal leftist. He thinks bris mila is anti-constitutional, whatever it is. He's against bris mila.
So I assume Rashi would agree with that as well.
Most likely. Yes. That's why I'm going to show you the next Tosfos to see where Rabbeinu Tam is attacking Rashi. That's a good point. That's a very good horror. Thank you for pointing that out. We'll bring it out in a second in the third Tosfos. So Rabbeinu Tam says no. See, in this Tosfos, thank you for pointing it out. In this Tosfos, what?
How did this mummer become an aral in the first place? He didn't have a mila when he was 8 days old. He wasn't a mummer then.
Right. He never got a bris mila as a kid. And then when he turned 13, he decided that bris mila is anti-constitutional, and he decided no bris mila. But again, it's interesting. This Tosfos in Zvachim, I believe it's Daf Chav Beis, Tosfos doesn't exactly tell you why Rabbeinu Tam didn't like Rashi. He just says, Rabbeinu Tam Mefarish, the Mumad La'arolos, he's a Mumad La'arolos. The Korele Liba L'Shamayim, the problem is for Rabbeinu Tam. The Gemara says he's Liba L'Shamayim, his heart's in heaven. Zog Tosfos L'Fisha Ene Oise Ela Mid'Agos Tzar Hamila. Says Tosfos Rabbeinu Tam, no, we're not talking about a guy who's like, I just told you, he's a Lahachasnik. This guy is pushed afraid of bris mila. He's not getting a bris because he thinks bris mila is illogical. He thinks bris mila is anti-human rights. No, he's pashut afraid. He's afraid of the pain and the anguish of a bris mila. But Rabbeinu Tam is clearly not learning like Rashi. He doesn't think Rashi's pshat is right. Instead, he learns an oral is a person who just punk doesn't have a bris mila. Now, why doesn't he like Rashi? From this Tosfos, you don't see. From this Taisus, you can't get a handle on what was wrong with Rashi's pshat. So if we turn to Taisus in Chagiga, I don't remember what daf it is, but Taisus in Chagiga writes, Rabbeinu Shloima, Rashi, b'chol makayim oral shemesa achem achmas mila. Rashi always says that whenever the Gemara says oral, oral always means mesa achem achmas mila. Avolopir Rabbeinu Tam demefarish doig machmas atzar. But Rabbeinu Tam learns that's not the case. It's rather someone who's just afraid of the pain of a bris mila. Here's the kickers of Taisvus. Avol mesa achem achmas mila have a oinus. Oh, Zav Taisus alumnus. Taisus disagrees with Rashi because Taisus holds if you can't have a bris mila because halacha doesn't allow you, you're an oinus. You're not an oral. So Taisus here is shedding fundamental light on how he understood Rashi. Rashi is saying, too bad, tough luck, lamaisa, you're an oral. Rabbi Natan says, what are you talking about? How can you hold this guy accountable? He's an oinus. The doctors don't let him, the rabbis don't let him. He would love to have a bris mila. The first case, the Rabbi Natan's case, the guy's tamzeh being a nudnik. He doesn't want to get a bris mila because he's afraid. The rabbis say it's safe, the doctors say it's safe, but he's a over-nervous person. So such a person, he's called an aral. But Tain, the Rabbi Natan, this guy, he'd love to have a bris mila, but he's not allowed to. The Rabbanim told him he can't. So we have a very yisoidi stick of machloikis rishayim on our hands between Rashi and Beinu Tam. What is the status of Mesa Ochem Machmas Mila? Rashi would say he's fourth in oral. He's still an oral. And Beinu Tam would say he's an oinus. So what's the typical...
I don't understand. Could you explain to me? Here we're not talking about... You're not talking about an adult. You're talking about a child. So does it make a chilek the fact that the parents are making this decision for him?
And why is that? What's that? Why does it have to be a child? Why can't it be an adult?
What do you mean? How do you know? What's pshat in the oral? He never had a bris, and all of a sudden now he wakes up?
Oh, he never had a bris because he's always afraid of it. His parents never gave him one. He grew up in communist Russia.
Yeah, but I'm saying, that's what I'm saying. I don't understand the matzias. He wakes up now, all of a sudden later on in life. I mean, didn't his parents give him a bris?
No.
He had no choice to be afraid of it.
His parents never gave him a bris. He grew up in communist Russia. He's a Baal Tshuva. I don't know. He never had a bris as a kid, and now he's too scared to get one. So now we have a 15-year-old. We have a 15.
Rashi wouldn't necessarily disagree the fact that he's an onus. He just wouldn't say. I mean, Rahmana.
Oh, very good. Oh, very good.
Doesn't mean that he's okay.
Good. That's why if you look at the heading of today's shir, I wrote Meisa Achim Machmas Mila Vitruma Uptur Chayle Mitzvah. Part of what we're going to talk about today, I guess most of you guys don't always look at my heading, but we're also, because usually I don't get to what I write in the heading anyways, but one of the things we're going to talk about is how do you understand a p'tur? So part of the question between Rashi and Beitam is it a p'tur and we say too bad, or there's much more here? Exactly, Ellie. We're going to, but we're going to delve into that in a second as well. But
it's the same halacha, mirror is the Korban Pesach. However we define oral will also be
possibly
or
Isra Karban Pesach. Yeah, most again, I say that because there's a very big sugi in Yevamos that we probably should learn, but because this is the last day we're doing this, we're not going to. But probably it is connected. We'll just leave it at that. Yeah, most likely. Now, what's the simple way of learning this Machlokes Rashi and Beinu Tam? There's a lot of ways of learning it, but the simplest might have something to do with how do you understand what makes someone an oral? Why is an oral out of the Parsha of Truma? Why did the Torah exclude an oral from Truma? Is it because he has a little piece of skin that hasn't been removed? Or it's because he didn't do what he was supposed to do? So we'll see in a second, that might be one way to be mazbe with the Machloikis. But before that, there might be another simple way to learn Rashi. If you look at number four in the Sefer Bris Yoshua, I don't know who the author is, but he writes an interesting Sugo Torah like this. He wants a Taina that even Rashi would agree to Rabbeinu Tam. Even Rashi at some point would agree to Rabbeinu Tam. Why? So he says like this, V'yitoch noima, toho de pirish Rashi de meisach ha-machas mila ein ha-yich ha-truma hu machmas ma-shikas of Rashi. Shu oi mila taki. That's because it's Rashi l'shitasi. Rashi l'shitasi holds that meisach ha-machas mila will eventually get a bris mila when he gets strong enough, when he gets healthy. So why is he no different than anyone else? He's temporarily in limbo because he can't get the bris, but he's oime to get a bris. So since he's oime to eventually get a bris mila, so he's not allowed to eat truma until he gets the bris mila. The kibin should be also yeshev sharis lomo l'alkein loy nefkim imenu chiev himo lachem kol zachor. V'alkein also lachol truma. Avol iyu o yu baru shalo ilum lo yochel kaim bris mila. But let's say you have a case according to Rashi where this adult will never be able to get a bris mila. There's never going to be, he'll strengthen enough. He wants to tell you, yitochen loyma shenifkam imenu chiev himo lachem kol zachor. Because in that case, then you talk of removing the whole chiev. V'imkein ha yamutu b'achilas truma. Yesh lefalpo b'zeh. interesting observation. He wants to tell you that maybe even Rashi, in theory, would agree to Rabbeinu Tam if he'd have a situation where this baby, this child, this adult, is never ever getting a bris mila. Which means the way he's learning Rashi is that the point of Rashi is not that I'm a patur, I'm temporarily patered. And Kolzman, I'm temporarily out of the parasha, I can't eat truma. Because since there'll be a time when I will be in the parasha, and since there'll be a time when I'll be in the parasha, so when I'll be in the parasha, then I'll have to abide by the rules. So according to Rashi, right now I'm an Aral. Now, what would this be comparable to? This would be comparable to, let's say you have a 4-day-old baby. Would you be allowed to shmear truma on a 4-day-old baby who's a kain?
Yeah, it's a beferish gemara, says it.
Yeah, the question is, what is that considered? Why don't we look at the baby as if he's an oral? The answer is, why is the baby not an oral yet? Because he has no chiv mila yet. The chiv mila only comes day 8, he's day 4. So if it's totally in the chiv mila, so where's this baby holding? This baby's holding not yet mechoyev. So if he's not yet mechoyev, he can't become an oral. So how do you look at...
That's one of the pshatim why Avram didn't give himself a bris.
That's correct. That's right. That's right. That's right.
He wasn't an oral.
He wasn't an oral yet. That's the brisker answer. That he never shame oral because you can only become an oral if you have to remove it. So again, we'll come back to this.
But according to what you just said, the spar of what you just said, that he will eventually become in the parsha, then you can't have it now.
Exactly.
Because we have to hold him again.
That's
so
what
he
I want.
Be able to
exactly. Him. Thank you. That's what I want to point out. That l'cha'ira, according to the way he wants to learn Rashi, the safer, it's going to come out that if I know in the future I will be in the parsha, even though now I'm not in the parsha, that would not allow me to eat truma. Which might be negeya to what I just pointed out in a second. So we'll come back to that, something to think about.
But you said it's a beferish gemara.
We're going to come back to it. I just wanted to plant that seed in everyone's mind, but Linada will come back to it. Now, if you look over in number 5, the Sefer Yismach Lev, again, don't know who the author was, but he writes an interesting classical shtickle Torah to explain the Machlokes Rashi Rabbeinu Tam. Again, we have Machlokes Rashi Rabbeinu Tam. What is the status of Mesa Ocha Machmas Mila? Rashi holds Mesa Ocha Machmas Mila, you're an oral. That's it, you can't eat truma, you're considered an oral. Rabbeinu Tam says you're an inus. What do you want from the guy's life? It's not his fault. So what's the classical way of explaining such a machlokes? So he writes like this. Ulechayr bira pluktehi. The Rashi loma de psul oral hu mishum mitzias. Rashi understood what's an oral. An oral is someone that has an extra piece of skin where it doesn't belong. Shabo deze mash vile toy ras oral. That's what makes you an oral. Ulechayr. So therefore Rashi says, after hu oinis, even if it's not your fault, am mitzvahs milo, mikamakim kivin di yeshba orla hare yeshem oralov. Rashi is practical. An orla means an oral is someone who has an extra piece of skin. You have an extra piece of skin. Why it's there? Why do I care why it's there? It's there. You have it. Finished. That's what Rashi said. Rashi's pshat. Ulam, however, Taisus lamdu. No, Taisus is different. The psur oral yisoydei mishum de overa memra de rachmana. He wants to tell you the reason why an oral can't eat truma is because he didn't follow the rules. The rules are cut off this piece of skin, and then when you follow the rules, you're allowed to enter into the special group. You know, you have to get entry into the special elite group called Eichlei Truma. And one of the ways you get access into that group is if you follow what Hashem says. Hashem says, cut off the arlo, then you get to come in. Ulechein, kol shu ones, al kiyam, hare b'chia gavne, enum avatal atziva lomu. So in that case, it's not that I didn't listen to Hashem. Shredinuk b'oines, loy lomu, because Hashem told me not to do it. Ulechein, ein ba psul da arlo, therefore you would have no psul of arlo. Rak b'gavne, du humumal arlo. That's why Rabbeinu Tam said, I can only come up with a case where a guy is deciding not to listen to Hashem. That's a conscious decision. So the way he wants to initially be mazben, again, this is it's a nice pshat. I think it's somewhat understandable. But the machloekis Rashi Rabbeinu Tam is, what's yisayid iser oral? Is yisayid iser oral because you have that piece of skin on your body, and until you get it off, you can't be part of eichlei truma? Or a different way, the other way of understanding it is because you didn't follow the rules that you were supposed to do. You didn't do komash and mutal olav, whatever was obligated. And therefore, if I did what I could do, what I should do, and the Torah baptized me, then it should be good to go. Now, the problem with this pshat that he himself points out in the next shtickle, he said this pshat doesn't work. Why does this pshat not work? So he says number 6. He has a raya from a Rashba that this can't be pshat in the machlokes Rashi and Rabbeinu Tam. Again, he wants to learn Rabbeinu Tam. The reason why Rabbeinu Tam thought that meisa ochid machmas mila is not an oral because the yisoyda oral is not doing masha mutul olav, not doing what you were supposed to do. And whenever you don't do what you're supposed to do, you can't eat truma. He says, why can that be? Because the yisoyda oral tola b'masha over al tziva lomol v'chol shu oynis kvar meisa ochid machmas mila lav oralu. Why can't that be pshat? He says, the imkei nyikshe the tumtum. What do you do with the tumtum? Tumtum has both simone. You can't tell what he has. No. That's not drugness. Right? A tumtum, you can't tell. So he says, by tumtum, nami ain lo din lomel atzmoi. A tumtum has no chiv to mal himself. Right? The Rashba over there has a kasha. The Gemara talks about what's the status of a tumtum. So the Gemara over there, so the assumption is that a tumtum, he has no chiv to mal himself because we don't know what he has. Ain oral lufanenu. So they have a frekt him. How could the Rashba have a kasha? The Rashba has a kasha, Rabbeinu Tam, what do you do with a tumtum? She says, what do you mean, what do you do with a tumtum? According to him, tumtum is not a kasha. Why? Because the tumtum is someone you're not mechoyiv to do it. If the yisoid oral is not doing what you're supposed to do, and when you're not have to do it, you're exempt. So a tumtum is the same thing. A tumtum
The reason you're not doing a tumtum is because you don't know where the oral is.
So they talk about there's ways to cut it open, and then you'll be able to tell. But we don't make you do it. You're not mechoyiv to do it. So he says, if I'm not mechoyiv to make that cut, so then I did all that I have to do. If I did all that I have to do, then why is a tumtum called an oral? That's his kash. So he comes up with a nupshat. So he says, Ella korchach mevor b'divrayim geder acher. There must be a new way of explaining it. The svirle de b'meisa achem achem asmila kivin shedinoi loy lomo lo'ilam. Since he's never supposed to have a brismila, lav bar milahu. He's not in the parsha anymore. It's ki'il of the Torah took him out of the parsha. V'lav shem arul olav. Memel, he has no arul. An arul is only for someone that has a mitzvah to cut it off. Avo kol sheshayich bod din mila. Meaning again, meisa achem machmas mila is mufka from the parsha. But tumtum is not mufka from the parsha. You could do a bris on a tumtum. You don't want to. You're not obligated. But you can't tell me that the Torah exempted him. Avo kol sheshayich bod din mila. You can be tumtum im yikara. If you would cut it open and see what you got cooking over there, harei zeh bar mila. You're already considered in the parsha of mila. V'shaper choshev de'is be'orlo v'shem orlo lo v'hu osa ba'avoyde u'betchum. Okay, you could debate this point, I think, as well. But he wants to taina that according to the Rabbeinu Tam, the difference between a tumtum and a meis achem achas mila is a meis achem achas mila, the Torah pulled you out of the entire parsha. The Torah was mafkia you from the chi of mila, which again is not so pashut. Why? Because you're not really mufka if you're going to get better and be able to handle the bris. He must assume assuming you're never going to get better, right? If you're going to get better, then why were you mufka from the parsha? You were only temporarily put on the sideline until you're ready to go. But he's assuming that meisach machmas mila lepshad is that the Torah completely removed you. You're out of the parsha. If you're out of the mitzvah of mila, then you're out of the prohibition of arla. Mashiach the tumtum was never removed from the parsha. Tumtum was just, we don't know what to do, and we're not forcing you to get to that next step, but it's still physically shayich in the parsha of mila. Okay. Comes along Rabbi Chanan and Kayvitz Aris. We don't quote enough Rabbi Chanan and Kayvitz Aris because we don't learn Yevamis, but Rabbi Chanan and Kayvitz Aris is mamish learned like a Rishon. When you learn Yevamis, you learn like Rabbi Chanan is mamish. Every shtickle Kayvitz Aris is a yisayistik should be yisayistik from Rabbi Chanan. So Rabbi Chanan writes like this, a very yisayistik hakira from Rabbi Chanan. Rabbi Chanan writes, Be'inyan oynis b'mitzvah. What happens if a person is an oynis in a mitzvah? Imikri p'tor. Is that called potter? What's the shaila? Rabbi Chanan wants to know, if a person's potter from a mitzvah, does that mean that I'm removed from the mitzvah? Or does that mean I have permission or flexibility not to do the mitzvah? But I'm not completely removed from the mitzvah. That's Rabbi Chanan's chakir. Which sounds like to many of us, maybe the machloek is Rashi and Rabbeinu Tam over here, but we'll get to that in a second. Says Rabbi Chanan, Be'inyan oynis b'mitzvah, imikri potter. Are you called potter? Efsholoyma says Rabbi Chanan, the be'emes, b'shashu oynis lo yiram yechiyuva aleho. Maybe in Echanami, while you're in the status of Torah, you have no chiyuv, mikomokin gavra bar chiyuva hu. You're still considered a bar chiyuva, af de'en a chiyuv b'poyim. Even though you don't actually have a practical obligation. Mikomokin nonetheless, sibas ha-chiyuv yeshna etzlo. You still have a reason for a chiyuv. Now, where is this negei halacha l'maisa? Says Rabbi Chanan, mushamachi kosho lichtev tefillin. Let's say a person has a p'tor, he can't put on tefillin because he broke both his arms. So he can't put on tefillin. Would you say he's no longer in the parsha of tefillin? For the next 2 weeks when he doesn't wear tefillin, he doesn't make kshir on his arm, would he be allowed to, obviously it's not like, but he can't be a sefer either, but would he be considered mufka from the parsha? Because for 2 weeks he's not wearing tefillin? Meaning Rabbi Chanan's point is, how do you look at someone that has a p'tor? Is the pshat that you're completely removed from the mitzvah? You're out of the parsha to the extent that anything that needs to be in the parsha you can't do? Or what I would call a technical problem. There's a technical difficulty here that sidelines you, but you're not completely out and removed from the entire situation.
You're temporarily excluded.
You're temporarily excluded. So Rabbi Chanan wants to say that perhaps when a person is temporarily excluded, he's not completely removed from the parasha. He's not completely like an isha. He's not ptur like an isha. He's still in the parasha, but he's technically unable to fulfill that is mutal on him. But the mitzvah is still hovering. It's still around. Says Rabbi Chanan in the next shtickel, Ois Yutes. He says, but ubechadushi harajba roish perik ha'orol hevi b'shem Rabbeinu Tam. But I have a raya from a rajba. Why? The Rajba quotes Rabbeinu Tam the Arul Shemesa Achamachamas Mila Avika Arul Shalei Bezmanei Umutalecha B'tshuma, because Rajba quotes Rabbeinu Tam, as we saw that Rabbeinu Tam holds that Mesa Achamachamas Mila allows you to eat Tshuma. Right? So one second. Says Rabbi Chanan, what's the pshat? Ulefi Dvarov, according to this Rajba, Al-Korchach Tzorch Leimer Deleka Lemitzvahs Mila Klam B'machem Pekuach Nefesh. Says Rabbi Chanan, how do we look at this? Mesa Achamachamas Mila says that Rabbeinu Tam is allowed to eat Tshuma. Why? Says Rabbi Chanan, it must be it must be now that he's a pekuach nefesh, he is removed from the mitzvah. He's not like an oinus. He's more than that, says Rabbi Chanan. Rabbeinu Tam says, like we saw earlier, he's plucked out of the mitzvah. He's done with the mitzvah. The Torah removed him. The Torah made him like an isha. How do I know that, says Rabbi Chanan? He says, "Devadai moide Rabbeinu Tam demein lo sak in lomolas atzmoi duasa b'tshuma." Says Rabbi Tam Gevald, says Rabbi Chanan Gevaldik. It's not just because you're an oinus, your hands are tied. Let's say your hands would be tied that the government wouldn't let you do milah. Let's say your hands would be tied that there would be no knife in the neighborhood. Would he be allowed to eat tshuma? Says Rabbi Chanan, Pshat Rabbeinu Tam is not because you're an oinus. Pshat Rabbeinu Tam is that the oinus removes you from the entire mitzvah of milah. And if you remove from the mitzvah of milah, then you're not considered an oral. So Rabbi Chanan understood Rabbeinu Tam, not just the pshat that we say, well, you can't do what you're supposed to do, so it's not your fault. No, deeper than that. Rabbeinu Tam understood that the Torah completely removed your obligation. Because when a person is an onus, not stam like a regular onus b'mitzvah. Because again, Rabbi Chanan understands a regular onus b'mitzvah, he's still in the parasha. He's saying, no, you were completely removed from the entire parasha. He says, Elo shekva nechleku al Rabbeinu Tam b'toyseh shamu b'rashi ve'efshur shezehu tam machlo kosa. Zogt Rabbi Chanan, this is the machlokes Rashi Rabbeinu Tam. The Rashi v'toyseh is svila, the ain't elo k'ma onus. The machlokes means, how do you look at this? Rashi may say this is like any other oinus. Tough luck. What's the difference? What the oinus is? The oinus could be there's no knife. The oinus could be medically you can't do it. Rabbeinu Tam says it's not the pshat that you're an oinus, even though that's the lashon of Rabbeinu Tam. The pshat is that the oinus then removes you from the parsha. If you're removed from the parsha, then there's no chiyuv milah. So Bukhan is
interesting. Same issue also in mitzvah, Pachman mitzvah, in terms of whether you have the ability to, you know. To do it if you want to, or to yotze somebody else.
Right, that's Rabbi Chanan's point, which I kind of didn't. He talks about whether or not you can be yotze someone else because you're still in the parasha of the mitzvah. Technically, you can't do it, but you're still in the parasha. Meaning, this is the shtickle negeh to the Gemara of Avodah Zarah that we spoke about a long time ago. Would a meisa achim achmas mila be kosher to do mila? Would a meisa achim achmas mila? So on one hand, lechayr one would say no. You're out of the parasha. If you're out of the parasha, you wouldn't be able to. Now, it's not so posh as that's what the Gemara says in Avodah Zarah, but I'm not going back to that sugya.
It sounds like from that, according to Rabbeinu Tam, if that person would decide against halachic command...
Oh, good. Very good. Elliot, that's the next Nakuda. That's the next, the second Marmok, the next, in two Marmokimus, we're going to get to that to Shaila in a second. Very good. That's very important.
I think you could say, though, that even according to Rashi, it's possible that also Rashi holds a mufka from the mitzvah, but maybe that's not enough to remove the shame aral.
Like, possible.
It's a nebuch. But you're still an aral.
Enochanami. Again, I think there's a lot of different ways that you can play around with this machloikis Rashi Rabbeinu Tam, how to understand the status of a mesa ochemach mas mila. But then we come back to this tesis.
Completely out of the mitzvah of mila, why would you ever revisit his situation? According to what you said before,
he's out of the mitzvah under this circumstance. And if the circumstances change, then we have to revisit the circumstances. That's what I would say. You have to revisit as the circumstances change. Now, let's take a look at this Tosfos and Daf Ayin. Now, again, each one of these Maamar Mekumis we should really be spending much more time on, but we have to take a stand on moving weiter. Even this year, at some point, we have to go further. So let's just quickly analyze this Tosfos and Yevamos, plus the fact that I have a Bas Mitzvah to get to in Tinek. But in any case, Tosfos and Yevamos Daf Ayin Amar Aleph. Tosfos says like this. And my baby is not behaving. But in any case, Zaktaisus, number 8. Birish Bekuntris. How does Rashi learn oral? Shemesa ochim machmas mila. That's Rashi. Zaktaisus v'chei nire. I think Rashi's right. Again, Rabbeinu Tam and Zvachim and Rabbeinu Tam Chagiga argued. But this, Taisus here says, I like Rashi. Why? V'chei nire deloidomi lo'or lo sholoi bezmanu. So Tosfos, I think this is not like the case of a baby before 8 days. The miboylom b'gemaru, the Gemara has a shayla. He have the arla. The Gemara taka klaz a shayla and yavamis. If a baby before day 8 is allowed to have, again, you're not feeding the baby truma. But then the Gemara talks about if you're going to be soch truma, you're going to smear the baby with truma. So it says Tosfos, 1 second. Why would mesa ocher machmas mila be any different than arla shaloy bismanay? They're both no chiyuv. They're both no chiyuv. So they should be the same. Says Tosfos, no. The hasam ki yotzeba lo have bar mila b'shum makay. Over the year, in our case, he's never going to have a chiyuv. Avalacha gimel, but over here, after ches, avalacha ches, avagav di efshel leilomo b'nei asakona, havi oro. The husband gets with every bar mila b'shum makay, meaning before day 8, there's no chiyuv. And that's why before day 8, you're allowed to eat it. Avalacha ches, avagav di efshel, but after day 8, avagav di efshel leilomo b'nei asakona, even though you can't give him a bris, Havi Aral Kimin Shegia Hazman. So what does it sound like from Rabbeinu, from Tosfos? Why is Meitzah Ochem Machmas Mila any different than baby day 3? Why? Because baby day 3 is B'cham O'Chiv. There's no Chiv. There's no Chiv Mila on a baby day 3. So that's why it's possible that he doesn't have a shame Arlo. But over here, we're holding now with the babies after 8 days. Avagav the Efshel Elom Nesakon, but he's still an Arlo. He crossed the threshold that you need to get a Chsibas Achiv. He crossed day 8. Day 8 is the Sibas Achiv. Now, there all the other outside factors follow through. Well, he's sick, give up, fine. But he hit day 8. Day 8 is the Mesibas Achiv Limilio. So therefore, Zak Tosfos, before day 8, there's no Sibas Achiv. So you're not an Aro. Mashiach, once you cross day 8, even though now we'll start to talk about Einsim and Sakon, Zak Tosfos, doesn't matter. So the time is understanding the difference between day 3 and Meitzim Achim Zachmi is you never cross day 8. Day 8 is the Mokim that's Kaveya. That establishes when the chiyuv starts. So day 3, I don't have that. So I'm not an oral. Mashenki, once you cross day 8, even though now you have outside factors, now you become a shayla of a oral. Now, this shayla, this machloikis rishonim, might be totally in a very interesting machloikis achorin. Take a look at this Oni Yomtif. Givaldika shayla from the Oni Yomtif. Number 9. This tapakti. Listen to this shayla. Again, it's amazing. These shaylas and tshuvas from the achorinim are real. Now, we look at them like they're so far-fetched, but they really happened. This tapakti. Guy has a medical illness which is life threatening. Comes in the Pesach. It's time to eat the matzah. The doctor tells him, listen, buddy, if you eat the matzah, you're going to die. He's such a frumma guy, he doesn't listen to the doctors. Obviously, we don't endorse this behavior. We think this is bad behavior, but that's the story.
That's not frum.
That's not from right, 100%. That's what we call today krum. Right? That's wrong. Right? But listen to what happens. V'ochel kazayis matzah, he eats it. And he doesn't drop dead. Ulisho oishtayim, an hour or two later, nisrape. He gets better. V'sar hachoylim me'olov, and the medical illness is removed. Ach amru, to the point where the doctors tell him, sharashay lechel kazayis matzah. He's takalari to kazayis matzah. So what's the shayla? Iyotze b'masha ochel be'esha hayim mesukin. Is he yotze with the kazayas that he ate when he was sick? The guy already ate a kazayas. But at the time when he ate the kazayas, he was a chayla. And he was a chayla, he was potter. Does the maisa that happened when he was potter count? Oidilma, kivin shayi ptur, oz melechel, since he was potter from eating, lo yotze, but he's not yotze. V'doime says the shayl to the eni gyomtiv, it's comparable to lo'odim to a person, shu itim cholim v'itim shayte. Gemara talks about a case where a guy who's sometimes normal, sometimes crazy. This is actually very negay. I saw Reb Zilberstein talks about this shayla. I had this in my shul, sadly, with people that have dementia, or they have early stages of these types of things where they start. It comes slowly. So in the beginning, they have better days and worse days. And the question was, can you give them an aliyah? I had a fellow who used to come to my shul. Now he's nebuch, very, very unwell. To the point where it's he doesn't leave his house. And a young guy, Nebuch, a young fellow, maybe 60, young guy. So the question is, can you give them an aliyah? So Zilberstein says, depends. If the time they're in shul, that they're itim l'shois, they're acting normal, they have regular cognitive and their brains are working regular, you can give them an aliyah. If the time he comes to shul, he doesn't know where he is, doesn't know his name, doesn't know what's going on, you can't give him an aliyah. So that's what the Gemara talks about. Itim choylem, itim shoyte. Sometimes people are strong, and sometimes they're regular, and sometimes they're not. So he says, so here also, if a guy would be eating choylem, eating shoyte, so let's say he eats the matzah when he's off his meds, right? He's not taking his medication that day, and he's totally in another world. He's a shoyte. He has a halachic status of a shoyte. So then he's not yaitzeh the mitzvah because he ate it as a ptur. Now he takes his medication, Baruch Hashem, he's back to being regular, so now he has a mechir. That was the shayla presented to the Oinig Yom Tov. Now this shayla perhaps sounds a little similar to what we were discussing before. That when a person's potter from a mitzvah, is he considered completely removed from the mitzvah? Or is he only technically bepoyal, as Rav Chanan called it? But l'chair, there might be another raya. This Gemara in Yevamot, which we've spoken about so many times, but we never focused on this specific part. Number 10. Says the Gemara. Gemara is talking about over here, Mesa Achamach Masmila. So the Gemara is, I guess we could say we learned Yevamot Daf Samach Adal Amabez well. I don't know about the rest of the Masechta, but if anyone asks, we learned Yevamot Samach Adal Amabez pretty well. So the Gemara says this, Ki Osev Yitzchak by Yosef Amuvda Havikami de Rab Yechanan Bechnishta de Ma'on. There was a story with Rabbi Yechanan in the town of Knishta de Ma'on. B'yema Kippurim Shechol Yis B'Shabbos. What was the case? Yom Kippur fell out on Shabbos. Okay. Umal Rishayna Umeis Shniya Umeis. And the baby was born to a family of Mesa Achim Achmas Mila. This was the third, just, you know, roll of the dice. Baby number 3 lost 2 older brothers to Mila, and now his Bris Mila is scheduled for Yom Kippur on Shabbos. So what happens? Ba'olifonav. They come to Rabbi Yechanan, Amaloi tells the mother, Lechi Umali, go give the baby a bris, no problem. Why did Rabbi Yechanan say no problem? Because Rabbi Yechanan thought that Mesa Achim Achmas Mila takes 3 times. And since there's only 2 times, you're good to go. So Amale Abaya said back, Chozi, I see the Kesharis Isura Visakanta. I see that you really are really convinced that it's not 2 times that establishes the Chazakah, but it's 3 times. You're willing to take it to the bank to the point of what? The Kesharis Isura Visakanta. You're willing to permit an Isser and a danger. That's how far you're willing to go. So Abaya, we spoke about this Gemara in the previous, so Abaya said, okay, I'm going to use it also. And then Abaya went and married a woman whose 2 husbands died before her, and he ultimately died from that wife. But Abaya thought this was ironclad proof. If Rabbi Yochanan allowed a bris mila of a meis achim achmas mila on Yom Kippur and V'yom HaShabbos, so he clearly believes that 2 times is not a chazok. Now what was the lashon of the Gemara? You permitted a sakana and an iser. So Rashi, what does that mean? Number 11. Shim chazaka b'shnei pamim. If you hold chazaka 2 times, v'ashlishi nitan litcha is mimenu, and therefore the third baby should not have a bismila. Have ye mila shaloi bismanoi? It's going to be considered a mila shaloi bismanoi. V'ha'enoi doicha es haShabbos. So how did Rashi learn the Gemara that this baby should have a status? If you hold 2 times, establishes a chazaka. This baby should be considered a mila shaloi bismanoi, and a mila shaloi bismanoi should not be allowed to be done on Shabbos. We know already that Allah is Milosh Rabizmanoi is Ein Adaych Shabbos. That's a very interesting way Rashi
learned. That eventually the baby, we wait till the baby gets better.
Very
so
good. Very good, right? The pashtus of this Rashi is because this baby will eventually have a Mila. He's not Mufka from the Parsha. He's not removed from the Parsha. He's not an Einoi Mitzvah. He's temporarily sidelined, like a Milosh Rabizmanoi. No one says that a Milosh Rabizmanoi is not in the Parsha. He's temporarily sidelined. There's a varf over here from Rav Meir Simcha. We're going to just skip it for now due to time restraints. But let's go to page 2. Frek de mitzvah eson, in the back of the Gemara, a very basic kash on this Rashi, which I was waiting for someone to ask me this from our shir. What did the Gemara say? That it's a sakona and an iser. Why? Because you're going to give the baby the bris shalei bismanai, so you're putting the baby in sakona, because maybe he'll die like his other 2 brothers. And on top of that, you're violating the iser, because there's no mitzvah meal in such a place. Because Chazal removed the mitzvah. Frek the mitzvah basin, you can't have it both ways. It can't be a sakona and an iser. Why? Frek the mitzvah basin, 1 second. Why is Mila asar on Shabbos? Isn't it just a mekalkel? Isn't there a shittas of Yehuda mekalkel is potter? It's just destructive. Destructive is not chayiv on Shabbos. So why is Mila considered non-destructive? So the Gemara says, because it's a tikkun. You're improving the baby. You're making the baby better. But if the baby's going to die, so then what did you improve? And if his mila is not chal, then you didn't improve anything. So if you didn't improve anything, all you did was damage. If all you did was damage, you're not violating the Shabbos. So frek the mitzvah basin, you can't have it both ways. So he reads like this. I apologize for the small print. He writes, he says over here like this. He says, "Dalibu de b'yechanon have iser v'sakanta. V'arilei meshkachas l'didei yisur d'chilo Shabbos b'mila." You can't have Isser Chilo Shabbos or Midrash Shabbos Manu. El b'makim d'leka sakana b'dav, if there's no sakana. D'ein sakana l'nimol, if there's no danger. I'm sorry, if there is a danger, have they makalkal b'chabur, then you're just doing a destructive act. When we pierce Rashi, Bishabbos mash the Biyichem and Tzvilek Yehuda. Ah, a Biyichem hold like Yehuda, who says the Laitzach call the Mishri Mila Bishabbos who Mishum Davi Misakin, the Mali Misakin Mila Mali Misakin Kli. Rashi Yehuda holds that the only reason why Mila is also on Shabbos is because there's a tikkun. You're improving the baby. You're making the baby more whole. So he says, "V'im kein haynu dafkim ein loy sakana l'nimul." That's if there's no danger. "De'im ika sakana nefesh hanimul loy shaych loy midim etaknoi." How can you say I fixed the baby? I killed the baby. "V'ein loy ma v'ein loy isit haraisa." And then there's no isit haraisa. Meaning, if it's taka sakana, I mean, I'm basically killing the baby. Then I'm not accomplishing anything in the baby. If I'm not accomplishing anything in the baby, then I'm just doing an act of destruction. If I'm just doing an act of destruction, I'm not over Shabbos. So, frekt the mitzvah eisen, you can't have it as sakana and an isit. So he says, and then he ends up learning.
I said, according to Rabbi Huda, call kav maternal chutz micho olam avir. An exception to the rule,
right? But but mila, the Gemara says. The Gemara explains by mila, even according to Rabbi Huda, mila is because you're misakin. That's what the Gemara says.
Right, but here, there's no mitzvah of mila.
Right, that's his kasha.
No, but exactly. But even Rabbi Huda will agree that chovel is an exception to the rule. Even if it's makalka, you'll be chayv.
No, the Gemara says that Rabbi Huda holds mila is an exception to the rule because there's a tikkun. That's what he quotes over the Gemara. We saw that Gemara. The Gemara says Mila is the exception because it normally has a tikkun. Mali tikkun gavra, mali tikkun gemana. But if there's no tikkun gavra over here, so then it goes back to being regular makalkal. That's what. So he comes up with a gavaldik chiddush in the mitzvah. He says you have to learn the Gemara.
You need three for a chazaka. There's no. It's no sakana here.
No, he's saying you clearly hold this way, but l'shita si, I hold what you're doing is dangerous. I hold what you're doing is a sakana. So if I hold what you're doing is a sakana, then l'fi me, it's not both. So that's what the Mitzvah Eisen learns. The Mitzvah Eisen learns it's takanapov. It's oi oi. You have to read the Gemara oi oi. Oi is Surah, oi Sakanta. It's one or the other. It's not both. However, if you look over here, Reb David Pivarsky in his Shurim wants to say not. Reb David Pivarsky has an interesting chiddush. He wants to say that even according to Reb Yehuda, there was a tikkun over here. What were you masakin? He says, number 14, Vimke and Lefiza, who had in Hocha, Afilu Neymar, Dolay Avi Mila Klal. Even if you hold that this Mila doesn't count, that this is an invalid Mila, he says, at the end of the day, the ma'isa, you cut off the arla. You can't glue it back. Now when the parents are going to figure out how to fix this baby, there's one less step they have to do. All they have to do is hatovas damris. So you accomplish something that the parents now have to do one less thing. That's also called the tikkun. That's also the heritage. I accomplished something because now the baby is already one step closer to what it needs to get done. Ain't a chanami. The meal that was done, bisakon, is not a valid meal. It doesn't count. But lamaisa, what I did accomplished, and now he no longer needs a tavas dambris, only a tavas dambris, and he no longer needs a chaticha sa orla. What is the Oinig Yomtiv answer to Hishayla? Says the Oinig Yomtiv.
Let me ask a question.
Yeah.
Is it possible to remove the shame orla without having the mitzvah of meal? The two necessarily go together? Because maybe that's the tikkun, is that you were behind the mitzvah of mila, be able to remove the shame arla.
Well, again, that might be told if you had a shame arla in the first place. Also, meisa achem machmas mila. That might be told in the machlokes Rashi Rabbeinu Tam. Right. Well, what's this baby's status from the get go? That's what I wanted to think. Maybe it's somewhat connected to. But what is the only yomtiv answer to his shayla? The only yomtiv clear to shayla. You have a guy who ate matzah when he's a chayla. Says the Ein Yomtiv, I have a raya from our sugya in the Yevamos. What's the raya? Says the Ein Yomtiv, number 15. U'midichosh v'lei mechal as a Shabbos b'mal b'oifin shloye mechuyiv l'omul. Says the Ein Yomtiv, 1 second. Why did Rashi call you a mechal al Shabbos? Because you did a mila at a time when there was no mitzvah. Im kein, harei chazina, the mitzvah she'ena tzvicha lasis b'shum sakona. V'ova v'osa, domi kimi shloye osa. It's like you didn't do the mitzvah at all. U'michashvina lei ki'ilu chalol as a Shabbos shloye tzvich mitzvah. Says Reb Doin Yomtiv, I've arrived from our Rashi, that the Rashi understood that giving this baby a bris mila in this matzv is absolutely zero credit in the mitzvah. If it's zero credit in the mitzvah, then he did an isr. So Zok Doin Yomtiv here also, v'hachanami b'inyin shel esenu, then tami kimi shel ochol matzv, as if you never did them, that's no, you don't get credit zero. V'tzorech lachzor v'lechol, you have to re-eat it again. So I had Doin Yomtiv read our Rashi. Here's a shtickle problem over here. He read our Rashi, and Rashi says, you're Mila Shloy Bezmanoi. He wasn't saying the way we were saying before, that he's a temporarily removed, but he'll come back to it. He learned that Mila Shloy Bezmanoi means he's out of the Parsha Lagamri. There's zero credit. What you did was meaningless. You cut a Orla that gives you zero credit. Now, the Ein Yomtiv himself, Bavurin, so why did Rashi use the terminology Mila Shloy Bezmanoi? He should have said, Havikilu Aloyosa Klum. You did nothing. But okay, that's for a different time. But the Ein Yom Tov learns halach lemais in lamdus. The Ein Yom Tov understands that when a person's potter from a mitzvah, he is gone, removed from the mitzvah completely. He has no shaychus to the mitzvah, and therefore, if he does it when he's potter, he gets no credit because you are out of the parasha.
That doesn't necessarily take away from what David Provosky said, because he could still
I want this Ein Yom Tov to bring back to Rabbi Chanan. To Rabbi Chanan's Chakira, but when someone's potter from mitzvah, is he completely removed, is he only practically removed? This Ein Yom Tov with this Rashi is learning that you're mamish completely out of the parasha, and anything that you did at the time is worthless. However, the Avnei Nezer disagrees. The Sachet Shavah, the Avnei Nezer says, that's not Pshat in Rashi. He says, no, you look at Rashi, mamish like a milah shleib bezmanah. And the problem over here is that milah shleib bezmanah happens to not be Deicha Shabbos. But lo yitzur, let's say milah shleib bezmanah would be Deicha Shabbos, avad, you did a mitzvah. You just did a mitzvah shleib bezmanah. So the chayr, the machloek is Ein Yom Tov, and the Avnei Nezer is mamish what Rebbe Chanan wanted to learn. How do you look at someone who's in a matzav of Tor? Is he completely removed from the parasha of the mitzvah? Or is he technically limited because the mitzvah doesn't start yet, and therefore he can't be Deicha Shabbos? But to say that he's removed completely from the mitzvah, that we're not going to say. That's the chayr of the machoikis Ein Yom Tov and Avnei Nezer. It's telling how he learned the Rashi by us in Yevamos. One.
Rabbi, but maybe if you do it on Shabbos. Oh, go ahead, sir.
Yes, Seth.
No, go ahead.
But if you do it on Shabbos, isn't it a mitzvah bar baveira?
Oh, that's the last piece I want to get to. Number 17. Says in David Pavarsky, Vine. What happens if a moel doesn't know anything about Hilchos Shabbos, but he does the meal on Shabbos? So he wants to entaino the Hadassah Rambam the Pirush Hamishnayis b'sheichit b'Shabbos David mumerai de hashchita. You the moel become a mummer because you violated the Shabbos. The having mummer shemol having kigai, and if you are a mummer, then you're not allowed to do this meal. So now l'chayra the meal is not a meal. So, Taina Rav Pavarsky, what's going to happen over here? If you break the rules and you gave this baby a bris milah when you shouldn't have, so you're a machal Shabbos. If you're a machal Shabbos, then you're not allowed to give a bris milah in the first place. It's one of those catch 22s, right?
Well, that's the same question by Shechita, right? How could a Shechita of Shabbos be kosher?
Right. That's right. So he writes over here,
Ochi. He hasn't become a mummer until after he did the bris.
Oh, but if the bris is not chal, right?
But when he did the bris,
so that's what he writes. He's achin hareim name adolei havi zemila. If you don't consider this as a ma'ase mila, shuv lo havi bezatikot. So then there was no accomplishment. El makalko bechabura. If the mila doesn't count, so then the act that I did was just destructive. If it was just destructive, so then I'm not a mummer. Ve'im kain havi choizer chalila. It goes back to catch 22. The eich yeh hadin bazeh. What's the din? The e name adolei havi mila. If you tell me the bris is not chal, mach mashenase rasha. So here, how's it going to work? You're going to tell me the bris is not chal because he's a Russia. But if the bris is not chal, then he never became a Russia because he's not a mummer. Im kein halo yavi Russia. The kibun shein a Russia shuv tzarech lias mila. This is a classic catch 22, right? And that's how he leaves off tzarechi and how this would work over here. Okay, Hadron Olam.
Maybe this discussion relates to this year when the Rosh Hashanah falls out on Shabbos.
Yeah.
And you go ahead and bring it over anyway.
That's where I was heading, Belineh, the next week to possibly talk about if someone b'dieved blew shofar on Rosh Hashanah, Shacholis b'Shabbos, would even be Yotze. Because strictly speaking, midday Raisa, you have a Chiv. It's only the Rabbanan, so there's a famous Rashba. That was where my mind was going to discuss it more, this type of Shiloh, for next Sunday. Maybe that will be our topic of discussion. Mr. Shem, this Tuesday night we will be discussing what not to eat on Rosh Hashanah. Last week we discussed what to eat. This we'll talk about what not to eat. And also, if there's time, we'll also discuss what you need to know special for Rosh Hashanah, Shechol, Liyos, B'Shabbos, some specific halachas. And then, Mitzvah Shem, Wednesday night, we will have the Chumash here as well. Have